Okay, thanks very much, Amy. And I see we're probably actually a couple of minutes early getting started, so I can stretch for a few minutes, and then I'll have to rush at the end. Anyway, it's a pleasure to be here, I guess, as a representative from the North. This is the second time Canadian Society of Soil Science has met jointly with the Tri-Society meetings. It's a little ironic. The last time we met was in Seattle, so we were sort of 60 miles from the border. Now we're in Fort Worth. We're still 60 miles from the border, but it's a different border. So it does feel a little different to be down here, but it's a pleasure to be down here in Texas and hopefully bring a little bit of northern flavor. Talk a bit about phosphorus export through tile drains. It's one of those things that it's been bubbling away in the background for a lot of years. Earliest paper I could find from Canada was Gaynor and Finley in 1995, where he talked about between 44 and 65% of the phosphorus of the sediment and 55 to 68% of the orthophosphorus export was through tile drains. You know, so it's a significant amount. Chapman, 50% of the sediment through preferential flow. Algo Zani in 2007. Talking about subsurface flow through tile, substantially greater annual average soluble P mass loads and surface runoff, and then Eastman in 2008. So there is a range of, that's just a small fraction of the literature that's out there that talks about how much phosphorus, how much sediment is coming out from agricultural landscapes through tile drains. And so it's something we've sort of glossed over, we haven't looked at very carefully. But if you look at the amount that is coming out in the tile drain landscapes, it's a significant fraction. And when you look at where in the in North America tile drainage is common, we have over half the agricultural land in Ontario has tile drains. Ohio, Iowa, a lot of tile drains. As you come south or into the Great Plains, not as much, but it's expanding. A lot more tile being installed every year. So that begs the question, why aren't we doing more about tile drains within a phosphorus index? It's obviously a significant conduit for phosphorus loss. Why are we sort of ignoring it? And really, we are ignoring it. Within the various P indices, in the additive P indices, there are some states and provinces that account for them, Alabama, Indiana, Iowa, Oregon, and Washington, mention tile drains as part of the phosphorus index assessment. Within a multiplicative system, Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and province of Quebec also mention it. And then North Carolina mentions it as part of a component phosphorus index. Most of these P indices, if they include them, assume that it's a fixed percentage of the precipitation flows through tile drains, or that you've got some modification to the drainage class of tile drains are present, but it's a pretty simplistic picture of just what tile drains are doing. I haven't found any phosphorus index that's made any attempt to sort of match the flow or match the losses through tile drains in any kind of a quantitative sense, a quantitative sense, trying to match the intensity of tile drainage on a landscape with how much loss you would expect through the tile drains, so we can rationally include those as one of the risk factors within a phosphorus index. Bit of review. After lunch, it's always good to review because those brain cells have gone to sleep over the lunch hour. There's different models out there. You're familiar with the additive model, what Lemunyan and Gilbert initially proposed back in the Dark Ages, saying we've got risk factors, will assign a value to each of those risk factors, add them up. If it's high, there's a lot of risk. If it's low, there's little risk. The next stage was to go to a multiplicative model saying there's source factors and transport factors. You multiply those together to get the risk. So if it's those areas that have a high risk or high source component and high transport probability that have the highest risk. So that was a move forward. The next stage, is what's been termed the component model. And I have to recognize Carl Bolster for coming up with the catchy name. And unfortunately, Carl's not here to hear my... Oh, yes, he is. Good. Didn't see it at the back. Yeah, I actually talked about this in Windsor a couple of years ago, and I was calling it a composite model, and that really didn't fit. Component model seems to work much better, seems to fit much better. So it's retaining that source by transport idea, but it's saying each source is going to have a different transport. So to say you've got a single transport factor doesn't make sense. If you've got multiple transport factors individually tailored for the different sources, you're going to be, give a better assessment of what's coming off the landscape. And I guess this would fit, Deanna, with what you called the predictive model. It's getting closer to being an actual measure of what's coming off the landscape on average over time, but trying to retain the simplicity of the phosphorus index. So in that component model, source by transport calculated for each component, and then these products are summed to give the total risk. It's important to remember not every component is going to be applicable in every area. So as a framework, it can work anywhere, but the individual pieces will be chosen relative to what's important in a different area. So here's, I guess, the overall model of a component P index, and this is where tile drains come in. We're familiar with the first two, where you've got a particulate phosphorus source and then transport of that particulate phosphorus off of the field through surface runoff, the same with a dissolved phosphorus source and a dissolved phosphorus transport over the surface. That's been the basis of the typical phosphorus index in a lot of areas. You could do the same thing for particulate and dissolved phosphorus for subsurface lateral flow. You know, when I talked to Josh McGrath about Delaware and Maryland, you know, that's where a lot of phosphorus moves. It's actually going down and moving with the shallow water table laterally through the soil. If I look at the conditions in Ontario, we can pretty much knock that part out because our soils have deeper water tables and enough capacity to tie up phosphorus that essentially movement through the subsoil is going to be almost nil. But then you've got particulate phosphorus source and transport through subsurface tile, where essentially you've put a conduit, an artificial conduit in the soil, that once water and phosphorus reaches that, there's essentially no mitigation between that point and where it enters surface water, where the outfall is into surface water. So you've actually enhanced the movement of phosphorus from the landscape through the tile, and we want to be able to account for that in some manner. So that's going to account for or work for both particulate and dissolved. I'll get back to why that both those come into play. And then some kind of a factor for fertilizer, what's added as fertilizer, what is added as manure. Also, we have to recognize that the source factors, and in particular the transport factors, are going to vary seasonally. Laura, I appreciated you talking about the influence of winter in Wisconsin. You know, things are different when you've got snow, frozen soils, and then spring thaw than they are in areas where you don't have that. So if we're going to account for tile drainage as a component in P loss, we have to look at both sides of the equation. If you put subsurface drainage into a field, it's going to change the hydrology of that field. The first thing it's going to do is it's going to reduce surface runoff. That's fairly well established that you divert water to the subsoil or to the subsurface drainage, you get less runoff off the surface. Estimates around 30% of reduction in surface runoff for a systematic tile system. When you get into a random tile system, which there's a fair number of them out there in the countryside, it's a bit more of a guessing game. You know, I've used the number of half as much as what you're getting as a reduction in surface runoff with a random system compared to a patterned or a systematic system. But it also expands the area that can contribute flow during precipitation events or during runoff events. It moves that further up in the landscape. So if you looked at the typical variable source area model that says, well, it's the area just right close to the stream that's contributing runoff, this changes that picture, almost turns it on its head to say, no, we're moving far, way up into the field that can be contributing flow when it rains or very shortly after it rains. The net impact on hydrology is going to depend on how much tile is there, how much area is drained, what's the design of the tile system, so how quickly does it move water out. There's a lot of factors that come in there. The water that's coming out of those tile drains is going to be a combination of water that's percolated down through the soil matrix and then moved horizontally to the tile. If you look at DrainMod as a model for water movement to tile, that's what it models, is what's percolated through the soil matrix. So if you've got a sandy soil and water moves rapidly, it's going to predict that a lot of water moves to the tile quickly. So if you've got a clay soil that water moves very slowly, it's going to say, no, water doesn't move as quickly. That's one component. The other component is what enters those tiles through preferential pathways, earthworm channels, old root channels, cracks in the soil, so cracks and biopores, so it's what's moving rapidly from the surface directly to the tile. And the phosphorus concentration in each of those fractions of water that's reaching the tile is going to depend on how well that soil sorbs the P. If you've got a soil that sorbs P very, very aggressively, you'll get very little that reaches the tile through the matrix flow, and also on the soil P concentration. So if you look at it graphically, you get water that moves either through the matrix, and you get that depression in the water table where the tile is because it's taking that water away, and you get the preferential pathways that move directly down into the tile. There's a lot of literature that says there's actually a concentration of preferential pathways directly over the tile. There's a greater concentration of earthworm burrows over the tile. There's a greater concentration of soil cracks that lead directly to the tile. So it's pretty well documented that we do have those pathways where you get flow through those preferential pathways with essentially no interaction with the soil matrix. If you've got water moving through the soil matrix, there's lots of opportunity for it to interact. So if you've got a soil that aggressively sorbs P, you're going to get very little phosphorus that moves through the matrix to the tile. And the assumption I'm making for Ontario conditions, it's not going to be valid everywhere, but for Ontario conditions, that the water moving through the matrix essentially has negligible contribution. So the contribution to tile flow is what's coming through the preferential pathways. So I talked about surface runoff being reduced by 30%. That we don't worry about movement to tile drains by matrix flow of phosphorus. So we're talking about surface runoff that's diverted to the tiles through the preferential flow pathways. The consequence of that is the proportion of particulate and dissolved P in the tile is going to look an awful lot like the proportion of particulate and dissolved P that's generated in surface runoff. And also that contributing area into the tile is going to be a narrow strip directly over the tile. You can say a meter wide over the tile is where that preferential flow is going to be occurring, and beyond that there'll be very little preferential flow. Because we don't have any mitigation within the tiles, you're going to have that contributing area expanding to the extent of the tile area. So without tile, loading of phosphorus to the tile is going to be proportional to what's coming off a unit area times the width of that contributing area, how far back from the stream it goes. If you've got a wider contributing area, you've got more phosphorus could move off the landscape. When you've got tile, you've extended that up into the landscape, but it's proportional to the width between the tiles. So the effective contributing area would be the surface contributing area, what's running off the surface, plus the distance the tile extends from the stream times the tile spacing. And if it's in meters and you've got a meter over the tile, you just say, okay, it makes the math simple. So we've got our source and transport factors through the tile. We're assuming that the particulate and dissolved source are the same as for surface runoff. So we're assuming that particulate and dissolved transport are equal through the tile, and that's going to be proportional to or equal to the amount of precipitation times the proportion that enters the tile by preferential flow pathways times the tile width divided by the tile spacing. That's your effective contributing area. Precipitation is fairly easy to get. Tile width and tile spacing fairly easy to get. The hard part is that proportionality factor. It's challenging because when you measure outflow from tile, it's the sum of the matrix and the preferential flow. We don't just get the preferential factor, we get both. And it doesn't come with a label that says this is what came preferentially, this is what came through the matrix. It's also going to vary seasonally. We probably get more preferential flow in the non-growing season than in the growing season. The proportion of preferential flow is going to vary seasonally with the rainfall intensity, so more from larger storms. And there's going to be changes with soil type. A lot in the clays, the clay loams, very little in the sandy soils because you get fewer of those preferential pathways. I've looked at some data, limited data set, on a tiled site where you've got both surface runoff and tile flow. What I came up with for a K-pref factor was 0.07. That's one number. I would invite any of you to come up with better numbers. I think it's something, if, when I put the challenge out there, hopefully we've got some data sets hidden in desk drawers that can contribute to that. We do have a project that's been initiated. We've got 6 field sites in Ontario where we can measure both surface runoff and tile flow year-round. Again, the difficulty of measuring during spring thaw and through the winter, where we can get the P analyses. So we don't have any data from that yet. Should begin to accumulate this fall. And any other independent data sets that could be used to validate the model would be more than welcomed.